Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michael, who just asked for the link to this YouTube video so that he could also participate in chat. Here you are, Michael.
It's like double chat. I mean, I'm chatting while I'm chatting.
Yeah, it's great. It's this whole live thing. Like, I have way more screens open than I did when we did this other ways, right? Like,
yeah, it's definitely a bunch of stuff at the same time, but it's kind of fun, and yeah. I hope that it's fun for everyone.
My headset that matches Michael's broke, so now I have to buy Michael an expensive headset like mine. So, you know, there we go.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah, I bet it does. Well, let's get right into this. So, we're excited to be bringing the show to you live again. And personally, I'm really enjoying it. Like, I get a look at Michael when we do the podcast together. For those who don't know, we have like this situation where like my mic sits here, like in real life, and you can't see it for those of you listening in podcast world. So I'm sorry, but like I have a mic that sits in front of my face, and then Michael sits to my right. And he has a mic that sits in front of his face, but he has his computer screen in front of him, and I have mine in front of me, and we don't really interact very much. And now that we're doing it live, like I actually look at Michael as I'm doing the podcast for the most part.
All right, so let's jump into this.
Well, let's jump in. So this week we're going to talk about playing meaningful games, and we're actually going to talk about Modern this week for our power rankings and our deck of the week. We want to start out by thanking all of our patrons. No new patrons this week. We had some edits to pledges and stuff like that, but you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. Starting at $1 or more per month, anything that you feel like donating to the podcast, it would mean the world to us. I also want to do, during this segment, I want to remind people that there is a link for shirts for GP Vegas. So if you're going to GP Vegas, you want to rep Constructive Criticism, there are Constructive Criticism shirts with you know, just a regular GP Vegas shirt, and then we did a contest where you can submit shirts that talk about Austin Geltz, who's one of our teammates, spelling his name wrong on the back of his shirt because he's a dum-dum and he spelled his own name wrong. Not really. I spelled his name wrong, and he bought a shirt with his name spelled wrong. And
alternatively, you can make fun of Austin in any medium.
You really can. And I get called a cyberbully for this, so I might as well, since I haven't talked about it in like, you know, 10 weeks, I might as well. But you can buy shirts for GP Vegas on our website that just have the Constructive Criticism logo, and we're really excited about it, so check them out at constructivecriticism.com. And you can also support the podcast by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. You know, everything that we get, we really appreciate. It means the world to me every time I see that. We're really close to our next goal, so if every listener of the show just donated $1 per month, I mean, I like Michael wouldn't work. I would just pay him to go to Magic tournaments and become a platinum. So,
oh man, yeah. That's so optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to get better at Magic, but you know,
like a lot better.
Hey man, it's about increments, right? You're gonna get silver this year. Next year, you're gonna get gold. The year after that, you're gonna win a pro tour. You know, it's. But I don't know.
It sounds so easy. It sounds so easy your way. Man,
I don't know why no one else has done that. Yeah. You can also support us by checking out our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can go to mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% right now off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good. That is going to get fixed as soon as it can. It will go up to 5%. But yeah, Would That Be Good? Every order, 4%. And that's a good chunk of change. Like when you are constantly buying from them, they have a good reward system. It's just an amazing place to buy Magic cards. So
definitely. And the 15% off is pretty enormous. Like you would be hard pressed to find a better deal than that, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're looking at buying a Modern deck, something like that, really good time to do so. And getting that 15% off makes that a lot more affordable.
And you know, some of the huge retailers like Star City Games and Channel Fireball, they're often out of some of the staples that you'll want. And Oasis Games usually isn't. They do a pretty good job of refilling. The store owner does a good job of buying and selling cards and large quantities to make sure that things are always full. Check them out at Oasis Games. I just want to talk really quickly about the Constructive Critics Facebook group. So if you are a patron of $5 or more, you get access to our special Facebook group for those people. And I'm going to be starting to post decks that we're testing for the Pro Tour and stuff like that inside of that group. I want to mention to those listening who might not know, don't share those decks. But also, if you want access to them, donating $5 or more per month in there, that is a great place. And I'll probably be writing a lot about Sealed within that group and kind of talking about it as I'm preparing for an RPTQ. Michael's preparing for a GP that's Sealed. So some limited conversation as well might be going on in there as well. So
yeah, definitely. It's always interesting to get kind of early format stuff, limited especially. I think that just getting more information is a really good way to do better.
Yep.
Especially for early format stuff.
So at $5 or more per month, being a patron, you'll get access to that Facebook group. And I'm always open to talk about the decks too. So if I post a deck list, that's your opportunity to ask me any questions you want. And I'm happy to talk about them as well. So let's go right on to our first segment. Every week on the show, we like to talk about what we're doing to try and improve at Magic. And, Michael, this is our hashtag always improving segment. Michael, we believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Are you getting better or worse this week?
I've been trying to get better. I didn't have a chance to play a pre-release, so I played. Actually, just finished up playing an Amonkhet Sealed League this afternoon. Really cool that that's out on Magic Online already. We did a little bit of talking about sort of how we want to prepare going forward, and just trying to sort of set a schedule and get back to grinding away at it. I had a nice little break now because both Sealed and really any constructive format have been dead for a minute, but nice to get back into it today, and I'm hopeful that I'll get to spend a bunch of time on it this week, and by GP Richmond be feeling good about where things stand.
Yeah, you know, I actually didn't even know that the RPTQ was sealed until these guys told me today, and I that's exciting for me. I'm a much better limited player than I am a constructed player, and you know, getting early edges in limited is something that I look forward to as well. Why do you value getting on the grind so fast?
Like, I think especially early, you just the way you're going to get an advantage over people is just through volume. I think that the longer a format exists, the more that your like just volume edges get negated because there's really good information out there from like, there are a lot of people who will write really good things about limited formats. There are a lot of people who will, you know, publicly share a bunch of standard decks. People win Grand Prix. You can see all the lists that are doing well. There's just a lot more information, but right at the beginning, the first couple of weeks, you can really press your advantage just through over preparation. Basically just if you just say, I'm going to play more than everyone else, because that's something I can do. And yeah, in my case, that's true. It's a really easy way to get yourself to a place where you're winning games through being comfortable and not playing bad cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about me then. I actually didn't realize that I didn't go yet. So I was like, let's move on to the deck doctor. No. So I am working on something different that I have. Like, so for those who don't know, we have a $25 per month patron reward where we play test. Like right now it's through me. They're always welcome to ask Michael though, just so you know, as a listener.
But absolutely.
At $25, you can play test with one of us once a month. And I am using an app that my company makes called Align. And for this, and in some of the things, like you can set agendas and stuff like that. And through doing playtesting last week, I realized that I want to start focusing on goals for me when I'm playing Magic. And one of the things that I'd like to work on is using my cards the best way in each matchup. So with cycling coming out, this is really important because we last week on the podcast, I talked about how I thought, what is the enchantment called? Cast Out. How I thought that was like the most overrated card in the set. Not that it's a bad card, but like, people have it rated number one card in the set, and I don't feel that way. And it could be through interactions that I'm playing the card incorrectly. So I'd like to get to the point where I'm playing the card correctly and then evaluating the card. Because if I'm evaluating the card while I'm playing it incorrectly, I have bad information and bad data, and that's not going to help me get better at Magic or help me evaluate cards. So for the time that we're in this state where we're helping Alex test for the Pro Tour. Hopefully we're helping Michael test for the Pro Tour. We have a couple of guys in Utah that are coming to our draft day on Thursday for our draft boot camp. And I want to make sure that I'm playing cards correctly in the correct matchups and getting the most value I can out of my cards in each matchup, because I don't think it's something that I'm amazing at right now. And I think that it's just one of those edges that if I can gain, it'll really help me in the long run.
I think that's about all you can ever do. Just try to figure out like what's going on, where you have differences of opinion with different people, right? Because the things that you all agree on, like, it's a lot easier to find things you agree on sometimes than it is to figure out why you disagree and how to like change that going forward.
And one of the things that I want to be able to work on, right, is like when I say I think it's overrated, you know, one of the first things that was said is like, Spencer, you play four of it because you can just cycle it. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm cutting actual removal spells in my deck for cast out. So that means that if I'm cycling this, it's like discarding a removal spell. It's not for free. And I need to understand, am I playing more of these than I would a typical removal spell because I plan on casting them? Or like, and in what matchups am I doing that? In what board states am I doing that? That's something that I need to understand that I don't currently understand.
Right. And I think just getting to a place where you're comfortable with the cards that are in your own deck, right? Like if you're not comfortable with the cards that are in your own deck, it's like playing things cold, right? Like you can go a long ways on just being good enough to figure it out on the fly. But if you don't, if other people who you think are usually right disagree with you on how cards play and why they play that way, it's possible that you can both be right to some extent, but like you really want to make sure that one of you isn't really wrong before you invest a bunch of time in, you know, playing these decks that don't make sense.
Well, kind of to speak to it a little bit is when I've been the deck that I won a PPTQ with this season was Jeskai Control, and I tuned that deck day in and day out for months. And honestly, like when I've played cast out in that deck, honestly, it has not been as good as the cards that I was playing in those slots. I was playing two Stasis Snare and two. What is the X enchantment called?
Quarantine Field.
I believe. Quarantine Field has been huge, huge blowouts for me. One of the big things about cast out is that it's instant speed like Stasis Snare, so it kind of acts as the middle ground between those two cards. And what I'm finding is like I don't know if it's better than the split. So there's a lot of testing and a lot of matchup dependencies that I need to look into to see if this card works for what I want. Because this card is going to be better against Jeskai Saheeli, which is like one of the things that I really wanted against, but it's going to be worse against Mardu than both of the cards, actually, in my opinion.
Right. That makes sense that like just costing four is more of a cost in some matchups than others, specifically against the deck that's really putting pressure on you, right?
Yeah. So that's my goal for kind of the near future is like learning and playing my cards correctly as often as possible. It's something that I really want to focus on. Let's move on to our next segment. So every week on the show, we invite patrons of the show to participate through questions or just any kind of participation that you see fit. And then we also want to focus for our patrons of $5 or more. We offer them a deck doctor segment. So rather than just normal Patreon participation, we'll actually go over a deck that they submit to us, and we'll read the deck and then kind of talk about our thoughts on the deck and where we think it stands, what we would change, what we love, things like that. So we're gonna start with one of our listeners sent us a mono white Eldrazi deck. It is 4 Aether Hub, 1 Greer Reach Sanitarium, 4 Mirrorpool, 14 planes, and 2 Ruins of Oran Reef. We have creatures. We have 2 Archangel Avacyn, 3 Eldrazi Displacer, 4 Hedron Crawler, 4 Reality Smasher, 2 Thalia Heretic Cathar, 4 Thought-Not Seer, 4 Walking Ballista, 4 Spatial Contortion, 4 Stasis Snare, and 4 Gideon. The sideboard is 2 Declaration in Stone, 4 Eldrazi Mimic, 4 Fragmentize, one Linvala the Preserver, one Sky Sovereign Console Flagship, one more Thalia, and two Warping Whale. So I have one initial thought that I don't want to forget. First of all, I actually really like this deck idea. I have not seen something like this. And this actually looks like it lines up really well in parts of the format, which is a good thing. One thing that I will say is I think you actually would like a split between Spatial Contortion and Warping Well main. It might be a 1-3 split, but I actually think that Warping Well holds a very interesting place in this format right now.
I'm just not sure that Spatial Contortion is actually a playable Magic card in this format.
Really?
Not killing, not breaking up combo and not killing Heart of Kirin is like a really awkward place for removal spell to be.
Okay.
That makes me really nervous. Other than that, I think I prefer Ruins of Oran Reef over Mirror Pool. I played some with like a red black Eldrazi deck, and one of the things I really liked about Ruin specifically is the interaction with Walking Ballista, and I found that to be really, really strong. I also am a little ambivalent just about playing six tap lands just in as a total number.
You're pretty mid rangey, and you also have mana dork, so it does help. It offsets it.
Yeah, I think my leaning would be towards more Ruins and less Mirror Pools.
So, with you not liking Spatial Contortion, where would you go in mono white to try and combat something like that card?
I don't hate Warping Whale in the main deck. I obviously don't want four of them. I think I might lean a little more on... I think my inclination might be to try like Scrap Heap Scrounger, something like that, playing a really light black splash then, which I think you could get away with at a pretty low cost. It would also give you a man land, hypothetically. If you want to play more like six tap lands, I think I might prefer some number of Concealed Courtyards and a Shambling Vent or two to go with more Ruins.
That actually sounds really good in this deck.
I'm not sure how, and then you can probably play not Glimmer Void, but the Spire of Industry as well, if you up your artifact count a little bit more.
Yeah, but I mean, you already have Walking Ballista and it, so between those you have quite a few artifacts, so if you can find a nice spot there, it acts as a colorless land and a multicolored land, and that actually gets you to the point where you might be able to play cards that interact really well on both sides.
Yeah, I would hope it would give you some better sideboard options, too. I think having access to Transgress the Mind style effects or Anguished Unmaking or just some things along that line might improve the deck a little bit. It's hard to say, given that I haven't played it. I really like the Walking Ballista Archangel Avacyn interaction in this deck. You have a ton of stuff, like having Thaumaturge and Smasher both not die to Avacyn flipping is really big.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that you are a Thaumaturge deck. You know, one of the things that has happened is because the way that the format is attacked from right now, right? So, and this is even true now that, like, this is not changing, right? We, I don't know if they will get to this in hashtag, would that be good? Typically we do, that's why we don't add the new stuff is done during the hashtag, would that be good? If the listeners want us to talk about it, we will. But since we're talking about the format, I don't think that the format's changing much other than adding red decks, possible red decks to it. And because of that, because there's no bannings, what you really need to focus on in the near future is, is there things that I can do to attack both decks and hit a segment of the format that's not being discussed or attacked or used right now, utilized? And man, Thaumaturge is like one of those things that if you in some way can interact with the combo and have Thaumaturge in your deck, you're in a different place than everybody else and in a much more powerful place than everybody else. One thing that I would say is I think that this deck is one that wants authority of the console. I don't think Athalia is enough, and you probably want that somewhere in your 75, but I really like the direction you're headed by being this big power hitting deck. You just have to be able to attack the best two decks while you're doing that.
Yeah, I think Authority on the side makes a ton of sense, but my experience has been that in this style of deck where you're frequently casting Walking Ballista for more than three, it does a much better job. Like that plus Ruin specifically can actually get like a, you can get like 4/4 Walking Ballista sometimes where they can actually get out of range of an Oath of Chandra. And
yeah,
that really helps that matchup. Like, it does more in that matchup than it does out of Mardu, because Mardu is playing a lower land count and generally just trying to play to the board a little bit more. Whereas here, you can really sometimes cast them for quite a bit. And I've had pretty good luck with that. But I do think that Authority makes a lot of sense in the sideboard. I like this style of deck. I think that the three drops you get playing white are definitely powerful. I'm a little ambivalent about Hedron Crawler, but I think that if there was ever a time for it, it would be now with no one really playing Liliana.
Yeah, nobody's playing Liliana. And honestly, like, if they're going to trade their Walking Ballista for my Hedron Crawler, I'm going to take that trade every day.
Yeah, I like the fragmentizes in the board too. I'm curious how this deck matches up against Mardu. The red-black version, I felt like had a pretty soft Mardu matchup, and I wonder if this is a little bit better.
Well, thank you so much to Matt, who submitted this deck list today. If you are a patron of $5 or more, you can always submit a deck doctor to us. We're happy to talk about it. If you're a patron of the show during the segment, you can submit questions. I posted a new Patreon participation thread. So according to your Patreon level, just submit what you want, and we'd be happy to talk about it. We appreciate all of our patrons. Let's move on to power rankings. So every week on the show, we want to talk about the decks that are doing well in a given format and then break down in depth one of the decks for you. This week, we're talking about Modern on MTGO. There's not going to be a tournament this week because it's pre-release weekend, but we want to bring you Modern's just way different. It changed rapidly again in a really interesting way, and I think it's a good time to talk about it. So coming in at did you have something you want to say there?
No, you're good to get into the listing here.
Yeah, coming in at number five, we have a deck that I would have never expected to break the top five, and it's too bad there's not a Casey Bloodworth on this podcast. We should have invited him, because Retreat to Kormhelm, Knight of the Reliquary, is coming in at number five.
Yeah, this deck is just, I think it's flexible right now, and there is a little bit less kind of big mana stuff going on than there has been in a while. And I think that this deck preys on a bunch of the mid-range, the kind of mid-rangey decks. It's really good at just like throwing a bunch of guys out on the board. I've had good results. All right, I've seen this deck put up pretty good results against Dredge. You have the ability to just kind of win the game out of anywhere and then play just good value cards in a lot of matchups.
Yeah, honestly, like, if we were going to move into a collected company world with our creature combo decks, I honestly think this is better than Abzan in a lot of ways. It plays a much better fair game and then can also win out of nowhere, kind of like you said.
I agree with that a lot. And I think a big part of it is that, like, there isn't like a hate card that's good against this deck. You have white, so you can, like, if you wanted to, you still have access to some combination of, you know, Stony Silence, Rest in Peace type effects, should that be, like, what you were looking for in a matchup. But you get a lot of really good removal. You get a lot of really good value creatures. Your Knight of the Reliquaries are really good at just sort of, you know, blocking Thoughtknot Seers, that kind of stuff. You have Spell Queller. It's just a very flexible deck, and I feel like, again, this is the style of deck where you're not quite as all in on the, like, search effects. You don't have, you know, Court of Calling, that kind of stuff. You're much, this is much more reminiscent of like a standard collected company deck. Yes,
I actually think that's important, right? When you think about the fact that, like, green white was maybe one of the most dominant decks in standard history by the numbers, people didn't realize it, but it was like, I mean, it just destroyed standard, and you had a deck that came in and toppled that. And the fact that, like, the key cards in that deck being Spell Queller and Collected Company are in this deck tells you that they just extended the thing that like, they're just like, all right, so this Spell Queller and Collected Company are obviously, like, some of the best cards in this deck. Is there a shell that fits those that already exist in Modern? And that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of this, and I've played against it a number of times, and it can do sort of a Hate Bears impression at times, and that's pretty powerful. Like, you just have a lot of cards where they're sort of good in a vacuum, but are especially good in certain matchups, and then you surround that with a shell that, you know, can occasionally win via infinite combo, is pretty good against Wrath effects thanks to Voice and Selfless Spirit, can, you know, beat graveyard decks at least, you know, with some kind of frequency, can go bigger than the Eldrazi decks sometimes. It's just flexible and relatively powerful. It's in a really nice spot right now.
Yeah, coming in at number four, we have Grixis Shadow. This deck is the Death Shadow deck with Grixis. This is a Snapcaster Mage, Thought Scour version of the deck. Kind of in the vein that you and I were looking at going into the last Modern GP, you and I were like, I don't want to play Jund. I would rather play Thought Scour. It feeds the deck better. And this is kind of where people have landed on that. And obviously Stubborn Denial being like amazing in the deck.
Yeah, this version makes a lot of sense to me. I think we ended up not really being able to pursue this version as much as I had hoped, basically because of Serum Visions seeming so necessary in the Grixis list. But I really like the big Delve creatures in a world of Fatal Push. And the big Delve creatures plus Kolaghan's Commands and Snapcaster Mages, you're just like, this is the version of this deck that is best against spot removal. And I think it's also the version of this deck that plays the best fair game. Like, in matchups where Tarmogoyf isn't really relevant, you can really change the composition of your deck in boarded games.
And basically the nature of your game. And one of the huge things that I think this deck does is when you're playing the Jund version, right, you're forced into playing a discard game. But when you're playing a blue version, you actually don't have to do that. And I think that's actually really important.
Well, you can kind of go either direction, right?
Well, you get... So the difference is the Jund version has to play a discard game.
Right, and this
version
exactly.
Gets to play a discard game.
Exactly. In this version, like, I mean, I'd imagine in some percentage of matchups, the Inquisitions and some number of Thoughtseize perhaps can come out for more counterspells. I think this is just maybe the most flexible shell of the deck.
There's a world where I believe you might sideboard out Death Shadow in this version of this deck, which you could have never done with other versions.
It's possible, but certainly you get a little more ability to go up and down, which I just think rewards good play and good deck building. It's less about like breaking a format and more about just having the right 75.
Yeah, I think that if there is a deck that could get me off of my traditional decks, this is one of them. And this is a deck that I would thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy playing. And that has nothing to do with Stubborn Denial, Michael Hinderocker.
Well, I think that this is kind of a sweet Stubborn Denial deck, though, in that every card in the deck that enables Stubborn Denial is great on its own. And one mana negate is just good.
Yeah. Coming up next, coming in third place, we have Affinity. This deck is changing, though. It looks like there are tons of new technologies that people are adopting. People are going back to Welling Jar. People have fully embraced the card that is Spire of Industry. And can I just say how interesting that is? When you think back to the times where guys, sell your Glimmer Voids because they might be gone. They might not be a card anymore.
I think that there's a little bit of a trade-off. And I think one of the things that I'm liking is a lot of lists are going, they're going down a Blink Moth Nexus and up a Rainbow Land. That's looking pretty common, just flipping through a couple of these lists. They're going in a couple of different directions, though. I see one of these lists is playing Glint Nest Crane and Main Deck Dispatch.
I did see that list. I don't know how I feel about that. That list is the last list that 5-0'd. It was super interesting. One of the things that
I believe is being advocated for by one of the South American Platinum Pros is pushing that list specifically.
One of the things that I like about this list is that if I play Glint Nest Crane, and I've always said I don't want a bunch of Edge Champions in my deck. I want Edge Champion for the right matchup, and Glint Nest Crane actually does help with that.
Right. It lets you play more masters in the main and then
yes,
just hopefully find a champion in a longer game where you absolutely need it.
So yeah. It's an interesting list. It's an interesting take on the deck. You can look at Megaphone, underscore Megaphone, spelled with an F. He 5-0'd recently with the deck. What do we have coming up next? We have, I believe it is, it's Eldrazi Tron, right?
Yep. Yeah, so this deck has continued to be popular. There are a few flex slots, but, you know, mostly looks like Chalice of the Voids in the main.
I think this deck is bad.
Less on the upper end than there were before. I do too. I'm not a big fan, but
I think you should not play this deck. I think that it's a trap. I think that you're going to win games very convincingly that you have good matchups in, and they're going to be huge blowouts, and it's going to feel really good. But I think that they're going, like, I actually don't think this deck is particularly well suited for most metagames. And one of the huge reasons that I think that is I actually think that you are a bad Thought-Knot Seer deck in a world where people are trying to kill much larger creatures than Thought-Knot Seer, and that's going to be a real problem for you.
Yeah, I've been underwhelmed playing. This deck is so bad on the draw. That has been my main takeaway. On the play, I think you're still pretty good. Chalice has text on the play. You're still likely to play a Thought-Knot Seer that's like one turn accelerated, but very, very rarely two turns accelerated.
How do you even do that without, you have to have Mindstone or a land, right? Like,
or Eldrazi Temple, yeah. So Mindstone, Eldrazi Temple, or Expedition Map will all play a one turn accelerated Thought-Knot Seer.
Oh, okay, you're right. I didn't, because you can play it on turn three still.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's okay, but I'm not a huge fan of this deck, and I feel like there's something I'm missing because it's continuing to put up pretty reasonable numbers.
I've never played with this deck, but I played against it a few times now. And here's my view, my scope of this deck might be incorrect because I've been playing a lot of Merfolk lately, but this deck has just, I've just been crushing it.
It's just clunky. It feels like a lot has to go right sometimes.
Yeah,
that was my impression playing
it. I feel like it's a wishful thinking Chalice of the Void deck.
Yeah, Chalice Without Simeon Spirit Guide is just not that
great. Interesting, something interesting to think about, and this is something that happens because we live in a world of Modo, is that on MTGO, when you own a deck like this, it's easy to transition it into Legacy, right? Where you need to just get the Legacy lands, and you basically have the same deck. And this deck gets a lot better in Legacy, but because of that, if you're like, ah, I'm done playing Legacy, what's the closest thing I can get to Modern? Sometimes you'll buy this deck, and it makes a disproportionate amount of these people who are really good Magic players who are like constant Modo grinders play a deck a different amount. And so it can inflate results a little bit. And I think that's what's happening, is this deck does really well in Legacy right now, even though I think it's bad there too. It kind of changes the number. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
I don't know. I mean, I think this deck is okay. I think it's just, it's inconsistent to a fault, but I think the inherent inconsistency also propels it to 5-0s. I think that 5 is about the right number of rounds to be playing with this deck.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't, I think there's a reason that you don't see Eldrazi Tron rising to the top in those larger events. And you
know, yeah, I think it's just inconsistency. I wouldn't say that it's good games are very good. I think there's just inherent unfixable inconsistency.
Coming in at number one, we have Dredge. And this could be a problem, Michael.
This deck is just great.
What is your MTGO name?
I don't have a 5-0 recently with it. I see Vinny up here.
I also saw Vinny. Let's pull up Vinny's list. So Vinny's a Salt Lake player that plays locally to us, and he has been playing a lot of this deck as well. Vengeful Pharaoh in the main.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit about that, and I think he's off most of his changes to the deck, actually. But this deck is really powerful.
So is Insolent Neonate the problem card here? Like, what's the reason this deck is doing so well?
No, I mean, Cathartic Reunion is just stupid. It's so good. Cathartic Reunion, discard two Dredgers is so much more powerful than anything else you can do for two mana.
To be fair, like, When you like think about this deck, for those who don't know, there was a modern RPTQ a while back. Magal ended up playing Ban Eldrazi, qualifying for the Pro Tour with it. And there was a time where every single person on the team was on this deck specifically because of Cathartic Reunion. It was like, well, there's no way I can figure out something that's more powerful than this. And we were probably too far ahead of our time.
Well, so the weird thing about Dredge is that how good it is basically 100% dependent on how many hate cards you play against.
Well, let's not get too deep into this because it's our deck of the week. Actually, no, let's just move on to the deck of the week. So this week we want to talk about Dredge in Modern. And luckily we have a dude that just plays Mono Dredge all the time, Michael Hinderocker, on the podcast with us.
I really like this deck. I think that basically anytime people are unprepared, they just actually have almost no chance of beating it.
So let's talk about key cards first, Michael. When you're thinking about Dredge and you're in the world of Dredge in Modern, what are the key cards you're looking for to draw, maybe in every matchup?
All right. So let's say if we're looking at opening hands, you basically can't keep a hand without Faithless Looting or Cathartic Reunion.
Okay.
That it would have to be like triple insolent neonate or something along those lines for you to really seriously look at keeping a seven that didn't have a Faithless Looting or a Cathartic.
Is that because you have no Golgari Grave Troll? So like if I had insolent neonate Grave Troll, I probably would keep that hand.
I don't think it was correct then either. I think that Cathartic Reunion especially is so much more powerful than every other enabler that I would rather mold a four on the play and have like land Cathartic Dredger than keep a seven without a Cathartic Reunion.
Interesting. Why is that?
The cards in your hand just don't do anything. This is a deck that I wouldn't necessarily say it mulligans well in the sense that you're really only looking for two cards when you mulligan, those being Faithless Looting and Cathartic Reunion. But the upside of this deck is that like a good four is better than a mediocre seven.
Well, I think that this is a deck that can mulligan aggressively, which is not the same thing as mulliganing well. It just means like you get the privilege of mulliganing aggressively.
Decks like if you mulligan to four, you almost can't win a game of Magic. Of sevens with spells and lands that you can keep in this deck that literally will not ever beat anything. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to mulligan aggressively. You don't have a choice. This deck is a really easy deck to mulligan with because you will look at your hand and you'll just be like, okay, well, double prized amalgam, blood ghast, stinkweed imp, land.
Yeah.
What does this hand do? Best case scenario, it's 2-1 into 3-3.
Well, I think one of the things to think about here is, you know, there's games where you just have, like, if you draw a hand of like two prized amalgam, two more Narcomoebas, like it's an auto mulligan. Like you actually just can't keep that.
I mean, unless your other three cards are land, Cathartic Reunion, and then you might think about it.
Would you?
It depends, player draw. I probably wouldn't keep a seven like that.
But I don't. You could not convince me that it is correct to keep that hand because what, like your Cathartic Reunion has to hit very specific cards.
Well, what I would say is that you probably wouldn't keep a seven like that. You may well keep a six that basically looked like that.
Okay.
Like once you start down the mulligan path, you have to be a little more accepting of hands that have part of it, but not all of it.
So what matchups are good matchups for this deck? Like when you are sitting down with a Dredge deck, what are you like, I want to play against this?
Game one, basically.
Okay. What is?
I don't know that you actually have any bad matchups in game one.
Okay. What are the kind of decks that maybe don't have a good game two matchup against you? Like, are there decks that their color combination doesn't add, like doesn't compete well?
Bant Eldrazi is pretty terrible against Dredge. Affinity is pretty awful against Dredge. I'd say you're generally favored against Death Shadow, although it's close. The decks you don't want to play against generally, depending on how you've built your deck, specifically like down to sideboard cards and flex slots, Titan Shift style decks are very close matchups, probably slightly unfavored. What you really don't want to play against is people who are playing 4 to 7 hate cards in their sideboard.
Let's talk about Titan Shift for a second. So you're saying you don't want to play against that deck.
I think the general thing is that they do a good job. So most of the decks with Anger of the Gods struggle with your long game, but Titan Shift is in a really unique position in that you're forced to kind of go for it a lot against them. And because of that, you're soft to their Anger of the Gods. A lot of like Grixis style decks will side in Anger of the Gods, but it's not very good out of their sideboard against you because they can't pressure you. In Titan Shift, because they're always killing you on turn 4 or 5, you pretty much have to extend into their Anger of the Gods. And if they have it plus a turn 5 kill, it's very difficult to win.
Okay.
And I would say that it ends up being slightly unfavored because
of that. Why would you want to pick a deck that's basically a game one deck where you're just hoping game one to get some amount of equity there? Why wouldn't you pick a deck that is more well-rounded than that? And why is a deck that's a game one deck doing so well right now?
So this is a lot like Affinity. Dredge reminds me a lot of Affinity. I would say you generally play against sort of similar levels of hate. But if you like... The difference is that Dredge is not bad against Fatal Push or Lightning Bolt or Path to Exile or anything like that. So those cards basically just don't do anything to you. So the real reason you'd want to play a game one deck is you take a lot of the variance in matchups out when it's much more about, you know, you're much less likely to like... I'm trying to think of a good example here, but if you play Affinity and you play against a bunch of Grixis decks or Kolaghan's Command decks, if you're playing against just Kolaghan's Command all day, there's almost nothing you can do about it. Those matchups are going to be very, very difficult to win no matter how you play. When you look at Dredge, you're much less likely to have like archetypically bad matchups, and it's more about your feelings of the overall metagame standing as it relates to graveyard hate.
What do you think is the correct composition here? So when we're talking about a deck like this, where do you get your wins from? What are the cards that like you can't cut?
Okay, so things you like are pretty much locked into are probably you're probably playing at least at the very, so bare minimum, 19 lands, 4 Narcomoeba, 4 Bloodghast, 4 Stinkweed Imp, 4 Prized Amalgam, 3 Golgari Thug, 4 Faithless Looting, 4 Cathartic Reunion.
I need to slow you down. Why is it 3 Golgari Thug?
So it's really about total number of dredgers. There's some debate over like how many Life from the Loams versus Golgari Thugs you should be playing. But I think that the generally accepted number, just based on large event results, is 7 between the two of them. And the general leaning is to play 4 Life from the Loams because it just has a lot more utility than Golgari Thug does. It sometimes on like a mulligan to 4, where you have to keep like fetch land, Life from the Loam, it can start dredging on its own. It's very good with Conflagrate, which is a card you're playing a bare minimum of 2 of and most likely 3 of. With Bloodghast.
I haven't seen a list with less than 1 Scourge Devil. Why is that?
So Scourge Devil, it's usually Scourge Devil or Haunted Dead.
I've not seen the list that doesn't have both. So talk to me about that person.
Interesting. So if you click through more lists, plenty of them only have one or the other. I would say most, it's typical to only play one or the other.
Oh, I clicked down from all the way down to 418 and all of them had both.
Okay. So if you go down further, there are a bunch with only one or the other.
Okay. What is the reason for that?
So both of them, Haunted Dead is a little bit better in grindy matchups. Scourge Devil is better in racing matchups. And basically the idea is that they're both cards that can trigger Prized Amalgam. People used to sometimes play Rally the Peasants, mm-hmm. and Scourge Devil is like
a better version
of Haunted Dead and Rally the Peasants in that you can use it conservatively just to rebuy Amalgam sometimes. Sometimes you'll get low enough on cards in your library that you can't really dredge anymore. Or like, there are all kinds of weird scenarios that can come up where just having an additional way to rebuy your amalgams matters a lot. It also allows you to sometimes kill your opponent from a pretty high life total because it's adding, what, 4 power to the board on its own, plus doubling up your Narcomoebas and adding 1 to all your amalgams and bloodghasts. Haunted Dead is a little more conservative, but it plays better when you've mulliganed a bunch. So there are sort of 2 schools of thought there, as far as I understand it. And the main idea being, some people like the consistency of Haunted Dead because it like allows you to discard prized amalgams that are stuck in your hand, things like that. Mm-hmm. Blood ghasts that are stuck in your hand, whatever.
Yeah.
And it also blocks better.
There was a list by Hypnotical that 5-0 twice in one day. So, you know, he went on a tear. And I think his lists were almost identical. You know, what
it looks like he played Vinny's list 100%. It looks like
I actually was wondering, are they the exact same list? And they might be.
It looks like it.
So what do you think about this list? You know, Vinny obviously has talked to you about it. Where, like, this is 503 leagues in a matter of 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, basically I think as long as you play the same 55 cards, you can sort of change the last few round without it making the deck like strictly better or worse. Like if you start cutting prized amalgams, right, you're just going to be worse. But when we're talking about playing a main deck Vengeful Pharaoh or the 21st land or the 4th life from the loam or, you know, Haunted Dead or Scourge Devil or both, or 1 Collective Brutality or 2, or there are so many little changes you can make that I think are more about preference than about being strictly correct, just like most decks, right? I mean, you're probably not cutting the Tarmogoyf from Jund, but you can mess around with the spell selection a little bit.
Yeah, you know, if you want to talk about this list also, you can tweet at VP Gorman on Twitter. He's often on Twitter. He's multiple Pro Tour competitor and SCG Top 8 competitor. He's a super awesome guy, awesome member of our local community. So you can talk to him about it. What are your final thoughts on this? Like, if you are obviously playing Dredge right now, so like, why would you recommend it to somebody?
I really like Dredge. I like the flexibility. I think that it's a deck that is both easy to play at times, in that like a lot of your games are just not very challenging, especially your game ones. But a deck that also rewards familiarity a lot, rewards good mulliganing. And just is very different than most of the decks you spend very much time playing. So I think it's pretty interesting. It's a lot different than what you probably spend most of your time playing. So if it looks appealing to you, I'd really recommend checking it out.
Yeah.
It's certainly really powerful.
For those asking about Nightfall, we actually did talk a little bit about Nightfall earlier in the show. You know, saying that we actually think it's the better Collected Company deck compared to Abzan. So if you go back and want to watch that, we actually really like that deck. So let's move on to our next segment, which is our training grounds. Every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or life in general. And this week, we want to talk about playing meaningful games. So oftentimes in Magic, you'll find yourself playing Magic, but the games that you're playing don't mean anything to you or don't help you improve. And we want to tell you to play less of those games. Those games where you are not playing in a meaningful way that impacts you to improve you as a player or, you know, helps you in some way. You want to remove those kind of games and have more games that help you. So the first thing we want to talk about is time. Michael, you and I live different lifestyles, right? I'm a father. I have a full-time job in a very demanding industry, and I don't get to play as much Magic as you. So what would you say as far as like the time that you spend playing Magic versus the time I spend playing Magic, what do you think the difference is?
Well, I would say the main difference is that, I mean, first of all, just when you have a limited amount of time, you just have to make sure that the games you're playing, you're really playing to get something out of. Just playing to play. Like, so the leagues reset this morning, I believe. So like I had to finish a league in Modern yesterday where I was literally playing because it was going to reset.
Yeah.
Right. I was not interested in the results of the match. I think I ended up 4-1 anyways, but it like you want to spend the least amount of time possible playing those kind of games, right? Where you're just playing to get through the league, playing because I guess I should play FNM, playing. My friend wants to play. I guess I'll play a game or two.
Yeah. Right?
So, and more time just trying to play games that are for a goal you're interested in.
So I want to kind of talk about the Magic that I play during this part and kind of explain why I play the Magic that I play. So I, right now, the Magic that I always play, I play a Winnabox at Oasis Games. And I try and play a different deck every week if I can. Or unless I like need store credit for something, then I might try and spike it. but like I'll play that. I will play and then when I play test, I don't just go in. So I play test a lot on man, this is so bad. I play test a lot on Cockatrice. And the reason that I do that is I can do it on my MacBook. So Wizards, if you just create Magic Online on my Mac, I will literally never use this program again. And when I do that, I actually don't play with randoms. So what I'll do is I have my playtesting team. So the first thing I'll do is I'll post on my playtesting team. Does anyone want to play on Cockatrice? Then I'll go to our Constructed Critics group. So our group of $5 or more on Patreon. I'll say, does anyone want to playtest? If I don't get an answer there, and then I'll move on to the Constructed Criticism family Facebook group and I'll say, does anyone want to playtest? And I'll use those people that I know have similar goals and a similar mindset to me to go and play Magic while I'm on my computer. And then I also will play Magic Online Leagues. So those are the things that I do to play Magic. So whether it's a draft league on Magic Online, whether it's playtesting with people with similar mindsets on Cockatrice, or it's a Winnabox at Oasis Games, those are the things that I do to play Magic right now to then move towards the other event that is my goal, my focus, which is PPDQs and RPDQs to qualify for the Pro Tour. And that's all of the Magic I play. So when you talk to somebody like Michael, he might play like 7 leagues a week. So he's playing, you know, 30 matches of Magic a week. And I'm not playing nearly that much. But when I do that, I'm focusing on the things that are important to me. And that's kind of what we want to get into is, Michael, you play leagues for a specific reason also, right? The reason that you play leagues is because of the competition level, which is different than somebody who goes to their FNM, and that's kind of what we want to focus on. So let's talk about opportunities to improve. Michael, oh, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things that I think that people don't realize is that you need to give yourself an opportunity to improve. I think that one of the most common things that people ask in Magic is like, do you have a huge level up moment you want to share with me? And it's like, well, yeah, I have one. Like I give you one, but I don't know that it's that helpful to you. And when you give yourself more meaningful games, you're giving yourself more opportunities to improve. You're giving yourself chances to get better at Magic and to learn things. One of the reasons that Michael plays Magic at volume levels, so high volume levels at high skill level, so he plays mono competitive leagues, is because he wants to give himself as many opportunities to learn and improve as possible.
Yeah, I think that this, like, depending on the level you're at, you can get this a lot of different ways. But it's about just pushing yourself when you're playing, be that at FNM, just, you know, trying to take it seriously, trying to seek out the best players, trying to find chances to play more competitive Magic. Or, you know, playing on Magic Online, just trying to really focus on improvement over results a lot of the time.
Yeah, one of the huge things that I see people doing is they will just play a volume of events, but they don't play in a volume of events that matter, right? So, for example, if I'm going to play PPDQs, I'm going to play events that prepare me for PPDQs and PPDQs, and that's it, right? I don't actually play Friday Night Magic because it doesn't serve the goal that I'm trying to fill. If your goal is to win Friday Night Magic, you need to play events that help you win Friday Night Magic, or you need to play tests to win Friday Night Magic, right? The Magic that you play has to feed upon the goal that you want, and that every time you play Magic, it should be serving a purpose and giving you those opportunities to improve in some way, right?
Definitely. And I think a lot of that just comes down to like just surrounding yourself with people too who have similar goals, trying to make sure that whenever you're playing, you're just looking at how is this improving me? If your goal is to win FNM, then trying to figure out sort of what you need to do to get there, watching people better than you, who are doing better than you at these events, trying to figure out what they're doing differently than you. And a lot of it is like just trying to play with purpose, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there we had, we, and we'll have him again, but we had Matt Kling on a while back, and you know, his always improving moment was like, I stopped playing Magic to play Magic, and I started playing Magic to fulfill goals and things in my life. And the way that this happened is he realized that he was just playing games to play games, right? He was sitting down on a computer. It's kind of like how I play Hearthstone, where it's like, I'm playing Hearthstone to complete the goals in my quests on Hearthstone, right? So right. People are like, oh, I hit Legend. I'm like, I'll never hit Legend. And they're like, why will you never hit Legend? It's like, well, to be honest with you, it's because I get a new quest and I go build a crappy deck to go complete that quest, right? I play Hearthstone as a mental health break from Magic that has a similar brain puzzle in my head, and things happen, but it is not going to make me better at the things that I'm trying to get better at. It's just going to exercise my brain in a similar way. And those are different things. And you have to realize that, like, if you have a limited time amount allotted to you to play Magic, you can't focus your time in the wrong places and in the wrong areas, because you won't improve as fast as you want to and as fast as you could. Like, it's just, you're being unfair to yourself, basically.
And even more than that, I think you're likely to get discouraged with your level of improvement. And
oh, absolutely. Because keep going. I think you had
more. Yeah. And I think just like, that's one of the biggest things that can get to in a game like this, where like playing perfectly is not like really an attainable goal, but it's about just sort of slow incremental improvement. And if you're playing a lot just to play and you're not really getting better, it's really hard. You can sort of, like we talk about in Always Improving, you can sort of actively undo good habits and keep reinforcing negative ones by not taking the games you're playing seriously and not trying to get anything out of them.
Yeah.
So that's really frustrating.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. So let's talk about making games meaningful. And we have a few things we want to talk about. We want to talk about it as a concept. We want to talk about having a focus, playtesting. Those are kind of like the main things we want to talk about here. Let's start with just the idea of making them meaningful. So one of the huge things that you can do is turn games that aren't that big into something that you can build upon. You know, Michael chooses to play Magic by volume in those leagues, right? The reason that he does that is because he can gather a lot of information quickly by getting on Magic Online, jamming games, and being like, what happened? What did I learn, right?
Right. And I think if you try to play a lot of volume without being reflective about it, it just makes you really prone to burning out. It's just not very interesting or fun. And I think that this can happen a lot too, where like there's nothing wrong with just wanting to play local events because you see your friends there and you have a good time and it's fun. Like that is totally a good reason to show up to FNMs and PPDQs or whatever. But if you really want to get better, I think you have to sort of set some of that aside and make sure that like the meaning in your games is coming from Magic focus. Because Magic is a really good social game too, but I think finding focus in the gameplay itself is probably one of the, it can be difficult to do, but one of the most important things to getting better.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I draw myself to Oasis games and their winner boxes is actually the same reason that Michael draws himself to those competitive leagues. I need to have a certain skill level or a certain mindset of player, right? I need a player that says, I want to play in this event. So for those who don't know, Oasis games has a weird reputation in Utah where it's like, those are spikes that want to get better at Magic and win. And if you don't want to play with those people, you don't play there. Which is an interesting thing, and I want to get better, and I want to play with people who want to get better, because I feel that more interesting conversations happen in that scope. And also, my friends have the same mindset, and they are more likely to show up at an event like that. So for a long time, and probably again, we will have players that are on my testing team that are showing up to these events, and we can actually discuss standard and our plays, and I don't get that environment other places. And that is a completely different thing than would happen anywhere else. That is why it's the one event that I told my wife I am playing in on a weekly basis. And this is different. I'm giving myself, I'm turning this thing, that's this tiny thing, right? It's a Winnabox. There's a Winnabox everywhere. I could go play a Winnabox probably at any store in the valley. But the reason that I pick the one that I pick is because it gives me the best opportunity to improve. And that is what's important to me. And it grows my chances of improving week in and week out. And it also lets me talk to people like, hey, like, what do you think about this card? So, for example, I don't like the deck teamer teamer tower, right? I talked about it a lot in the last year or last couple months. But I did play teamer tower again to give it another chance. And what I learned is I was playing with the wrong cards. And that cards like Horribly Awry are – like way better, right? Like, oh, this deck, I just wanted more counter spells all the time, and I was playing it incorrectly, and I probably could have gotten more wins if I had listened to people who were going through the deck and learning a little bit faster than I was.
Yeah, and I think that, like, just when you talk about the focus on improvement, so it's a win a box, right, that you're playing regularly, and obviously you want to win at least somewhat regularly, right? I mean, it's not fun if you're getting crushed all the time, but putting the focus on, you know, putting the focus on improvement and getting better at playing, giving yourself a better chance at larger events, just on learning rather than like how many matches can I win at a Winnabox?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, or at an FNM, or even at a PPTQ. Like, so many things go into playing well that go a lot beyond just like wins and losses, and there's enough variance, and enough can be determined by the level of your opponent's play as well as your own, that a lot of the time wins and losses are not, especially over the short term, a great way to track your progress.
Yeah, it's about learnings for me, right? So I have never won a box. I've never won the Winnabox with Teamer Tower, but I learned a lot about Teamer Tower and the construction of those decks through these events. And you know, that's more important to me than winning that box. But at the same time, like, you have to win the box sometimes, right? Otherwise, there's not, you know, Michael on this podcast, he talked about a while back, he said, the reason that I play in competitive leagues is because I'm betting money that I am going to win more matches in this league than the average person. And that's right. that's what those Winnaboxes are. But you have to turn your FNM or your Winnabox or whatever you're playing into that, right? You have to say, while I'm making this bet, I'm also going to gain learnings from this event, because you're trying to get a 2-for-1, but it's important as to like the context that you're playing in those matches, right? Michael, if you 4-1 to every league, would you be pretty happy?
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. But the hope is that, you know, as your sample size gets bigger, it also means you're playing better, right?
Right. And eventually you'll do better and better throughout those leagues as you're playing against better and better competition. And you're also focusing on certain things. Let's talk about having a focus really quick. So I have two things written down here. And I think that the biggest one is you need to set goals when you're going into events. That doesn't have to be one event, right? I can have one goal for 5 Winnaboxes or 5 FNMs or 5 modern leagues or 5 standard leagues. But I need to know what I'm trying to get out of these things. Otherwise, I'm just playing Magic.
Which is fun, but ultimately less productive than you might hope. Like, I just taking a stab at conscious improvement, I think, is generally going to give you a better idea of how you're doing with relation to your goals, right? Like, if you're just playing to play, it's hard to tell how much better you're getting.
Yeah, you need to like say, and I don't, when I say goals, I don't mean like win the Winnabox. I mean, like, when I sit down, I'm like, all right, I'm going to learn about X. I'm going to get better at X.
Yeah, I want to learn about this matchup or this deck or where the format is right now and why. Yeah. I, you know,
The reason that I played Teemer Tower twice was not because I thought Teemer Tower would win me the win a box. It was because Teemer Tower is winning. I need to figure out why it's winning.
Right. Right. And I think that along with this, focusing on the formats that are gonna that are gonna be relevant to you in the near future makes a lot of sense. So like right now I'm much more interested in limited than I am in constructed, given that like my next large event is probably going to be a limited Grand Prix. And then
if you do well at that, it's gonna be a pro tour. So wait, I'm confused. Do you play in the RPTQ if you do well at the Grand Prix?
Yes. Because I would
use because you can get a plane ticket.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a lot of money. Yeah.
Side conversation. We're talking about Japan here. So that's the same for me, right? So I actually thought that I was focusing on standard right now before our conversation today. I'm like, I need to like jam standard. I've been building standard lists. I'm like, I need to know what the best four colors daily list and stuff like that. And then you're like, oh no, the RPTQ is sealed. And I'm like, okay.
Well, it's good to know.
Shift.
Yeah.
So now I have two focuses instead of one, which kind of sucks. I now actually have to focus on sealed PPTQs if they're available to me, and just basically play as much sealed and draft as possible. So it's a huge shift in my mentality where now it's like, yeah, I probably actually, it was funny. I went downstairs, took a dinner, and downstairs I'm like, man, I need to start doing, you know, sealed leagues and sealed drafts. Like that's the thing that just has to happen now. And it's because my time is going to be best spent trying to qualify for the Pro Tour. And if I'm going to qualify for the Pro Tour right now, the best thing for me to do is to be playing sealed because my RBDQ is sealed.
Right. No, I mean, that's all you can really do, right? I'm not saying you want to like completely let go and lose touch with constructed and formats that are not immediately relevant to you, or else you're going to be constantly kind of essentially trying to cram for exams every time you have a big event.
Right. Which is rough and not fun.
Yeah. And it that gets really tiring, and it's really hard not to burn yourself out. You have to find a balance that works for you, but it's understanding like what is your goal when you're playing, right? And if your larger goal is to qualify for a pro tour or to do well at a Grand Prix or to win a PPTQ, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be devoting a bunch of your time to a format that ultimately is less relevant to you.
Exactly. You know, and the next thing we want to talk about is kind of playtesting. So I feel like it's the larger thing, this idea that we're talking about, but you actually just have to do it. If you expect to just like write out a deck list and go to an event and win that event, you are dead wrong. Like, we are in a different world, guys. We are not in the world where you can gain this minute edge by coming up with something that nobody understands. We're in a world where everybody that shows up to an event probably has a pretty decent deck or a pretty decent idea, because we are in the world of the internet where information is shared really easily, right? Everyone who wants to play limited either watches limited videos, listens to limited resources, and has an idea of the limited metagame. We are not in the world where you do 10 drafts and nobody else knows what's going on. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. Michael's yawning.
I think that's even more true in constructed. Just the information available is so good that you really need to make sure that you're maximizing your time, because there's so much information out there that if you're not, it's really hard to gain an edge.
Yeah, there's a real trap to fall into. So today we had a small team meeting. It was like five guys, and we talked about how we wanted to prepare for constructed. And Michael was like, listen, I'm not doing anything other than playing four colors Healy. Like, I'm going to find the best four colors Healy list. If you guys find something that beats it, that's great, but I'm not going to do anything else. And it's because Michael's like, my best time is dedicated to finding this best list because I don't believe that you can beat it.
I certainly believe that I'm less likely to be able to find. I'm way more likely, if you think about just the utility, right, of every amount, like minute or hour or whatever you're going to spend on something, I'm way more likely to find marginal improvement for Saheeli than I am to find something that is like breaking the format.
That's also why you have a team, right? You don't have to be the one to break the format. You can be the one that's like, I'm going to work on four colors Saheeli. If I'm going to go to this pro tour, I'm going to go with a deck that I know. I'm going to do these things. And that's different. And the thing is that, like, if you don't play test, right? If you showed up to the pro tour and you're like, well, I think that I want 3 Walking Ballistas, 2 Glory Bringers, no Planeswalkers other than Zahili, and 2 Castouts in my deck, and I'll just build the list from there. That's bad. You didn't playtest anything. You don't actually know if that list is good. You don't even know if it works. You don't know if your idea is that you love on paper is good. You actually have to put in the work after you've come up with the deck idea. You know, the number of people... I would say my biggest mistake in Magic is not playing the teamer deck that I invented going into the Pro Tour for the Pro Tour that I qualified with teamer. And the reason that I didn't do it is everybody who didn't play test my deck was like, Spencer, your teamer deck is bad. I can't believe you won an RPG with it. You need to switch decks. I'm like, yeah, I guess if you're all saying it's bad, I shouldn't play it. And it's like, no, I put in 50, 60, 70, 80, you know, so many hours with this deck, and I know that it's good. I know what it beats. I know my matchups. I should have, if I thought that deck was playable at the Pro Tour, which I did, I should have played it. And the thing is like, Michael's saying, if you guys find something that beats 4 Colors Healy, let me know. I'm going to work on this deck that I know is good. I'm going to spend my time appropriately and play meaningful games. You guys can jam everything you want in the world against my 4 Colors Healy deck, right? You don't care what we play against it. You just want to know everything, right? You want to know everything about the deck.
Right. And the goal is basically... The goal is basically, like, as much as possible, just don't waste your time, maximize your time, allow other people to maximize theirs, right? The idea is just that we can all work on the things that we are best at, that we have time for, and ideally between you and the people that you communicate with about Magic, you can come to, like, an understanding and an agreement that'll work really well for everyone. Right, because the flip side is that if someone else invests a bunch of time working on all these decks and it turns out that none of them are as good as they hoped they would be, then the idea is that they can take the work that I've done in tuning an archetype, I can write up, you know, something a little more manageable for them, and they can shave a bunch of time off of, you know, becoming competent with a deck that does work.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I've learned about myself, right, is that I am good at finding an archetype that I think will be good in the format and then finding the right composition of cards to make that deck win an event or do well in an event, right? That's the thing that I'm good at. That might not be the thing that you're good at. You could be the guy that's like, I need to learn this deck that I know is good. You could be the guy that's like, I'm good at finding sideboard cards, right? And then surround yourself with people that you play games with that can fill in the gaps that you don't have, right? That you're not there. Michael, he's good at playing Magic by volume. I'm good at brewing and finding cards. You know, there are people on our team that are good at different things. You have to surround yourself with the right people and then fill in the gaps that you don't have and then trust those people. That's why you put them on your testing team. That's why you surround yourself with them, is to get their advice and build appropriately. And if you don't have those people, there are so many resources out there for you still. There's tons and tons of people building awesome decks. Go read a Jerry Thompson article. Go read a Patrick Chapin article. Go read a Paulo Vitra article. There are people out there that are going to give you the information you need, and you can build upon those blocks that they've set down for you. They're the framework for you to build the best deck, to do the best play testing, and all of those things. And, you know, it's something that you should be thinking about, and you should be trying to be constantly improving upon.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of it for this episode. Do what you can to make your games meaningful. If you are playing in an FNM, what's your goal for that FNM? What are you trying to get out of it? What's the next step for you after that FNM? Is it to win that FNM? That's fine. What are you doing beforehand to win that FNM? Are you playing on Wednesday? Are you playing on Tuesday? What are the things that you're trying to get out of things to push your goals forward and play meaningful games of Magic? Because the more meaningful games you play, the faster you'll improve. And the things that you do to try and make those games meaningful is really important. So don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. Starting at $1 or more per month, anything that you see fit is really appreciated. We are, I think now, we were $30 last week. I think we're $32 this week. We had some edits and stuff like that. $33 away from creating goat tokens of Michael. So, you know, if you want to see Michael as a goat.
I mean, that's something we can all agree on, right?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I'm really excited about tokens. I think it's like a real thing. Once we get the ball rolling on tokens, it's going to be super easy to do other things. At $300 a month, like when we talked about the Patreon, we were like, at $300 a month, we can really start doing things. I was easily able to order wristbands this month. We are out of wristbands. My house cleaner that we had threw them away. I can't find them. But it was like, yeah, I can buy wristbands. I can buy like a huge amount of wristbands. We'll have wristbands for a really long time now. And I bought a ton of wristbands. And people love them. I've seen people wearing them around Salt Lake. I know people wear them at GPs. You know, they're like the Livestrong bands from back in the early 2000s. And, you know, people love them. And I was able to buy them quickly because of the Patreon. And the same thing will be true of tokens. Once we get the funding where we hit that goal, we'll create those tokens. And we'll just be able to give them out. And that's like a huge thing. And then once we get a little bit more, we'll be able to create playmats. And like, this is things that people are asking for, right? Like, I have had so many people like, oh man, I would love to play with your guys' tokens. And it's like, listen, we are really close. If you donated $5 and every person that asked me about tokens donated $5, we would have hit tokens a long time ago. And you get those tokens. So if you're a Patreon, like, I'm not just saying when we hit 300, we're going to make tokens. If you're a Patreon, when we hit 300, you get free tokens. I will send you tokens. So so check it out, patreon.com/ccmtg. Yeah, anything that you see fit, we really do appreciate it. So Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hinderrocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast every week on mtgcast.com, constructivecriticism.com, and YouTube. We do it live every week. So if you want to be a part of the show, we have AT Reef just said hello to us. Hello, AT Reef. You know, we want to do things to improve the show. And honestly, I've loved doing this show live. And
absolutely. It's pretty fun.
Like, Michael, how nice is doing the show from your house? Let's be honest.
Oh, it's definitely a little bit easier.
It's so great. And we love doing it. And, you know, I love the fact that I know for a fact that Mason slash Austin is watching. And I get to communicate with that person. So you can watch every week on YouTube live at 10 p.m. Eastern. We do have a guest coming up that I think is on a Tuesday. We have Donald. The week of the Pro Tour. So after the Pro Tour, we might shift the show to have Pro Tour topic competitor. His name is Donald, right?
Yeah, Donald Smith.
Yeah, Donald Smith is going to come on. And we will talk about our Pro Tour testing and his Pro Tour testing live on the show after the Pro Tour and kind of where our Pro Tour and we have a bad habit of like changing our Pro Tour testing. I think this Pro Tour testing will be very different, but we will talk about ours versus theirs. And they do a network kind of style, and we don't share deck lists other than with our patrons. And it'll be interesting to see kind of, I know Michael for Kaladesh. You or not Kaladesh? Was it Kaladesh that you were in like a bunch of groups for?
For Aether Revolt.
Aether Revolt,
including a couple with Donald. Really nice guy. Really smart guy. It'd be fun to have him on and get to talk to him.
So, yeah. So we have a couple guests lined up, and we're excited to have them join the live show, which you can watch on YouTube. You can also join the conversations by joining the Facebook group. Even if you're not a patron, you can go to the Constructive Criticism family on Facebook, ask for an invite. I'm happy to add everybody. And honestly, I have never been a part of an internet community like that group. Like, I have never been a part of a group like this where I don't think there's ever been – other than people who don't listen to the podcast, I don't know if there's ever been a fight. Like, nobody's ever gotten in an internet fight that listened to our podcast in our group. Which is weird.
Impressive, isn't it? Yeah.
It's really weird. And I think it's because if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you want to join that group, it means that you are dedicated to That is Michael. You guys are so funny. You guys are dedicated to a certain part of life that means that you want to get better at something, that you have a mindset that if you do X, Y, and Z, and you create this step for yourself to like level up, that it'll happen for you. And I just don't think that exists and you're also held accountable because our Facebook group is not, it's not a, you know, anonymous.
It's not anonymous. Really.
Yeah.
Just the.
So like you're held accountable. Like if you say something really rude, like everybody's gonna be like, man, that guy's really rude. And I think that's important in culture that we've tried to lose between Reddit and stuff like that. So if you want to try and get better at Magic and you want to talk to people who have similar goals to you, join that Facebook group. We also have a Discord channel, which one of our guys, Chad runs, and you can ask me for the link. We'd be happy to send it to you. I am in Discord all day, every day. I don't know. I don't think that's true about Michael, but I'm always in Discord. So, you know,
always in, but it's certainly something I try to do occasionally. And it's something I can also continue to try to do.
Yeah. So join that Discord channel. You can do the clan on MTGO by messaging me on MTGO at Spencer13Dev. You can message Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE. Did I say that right?
I believe so.
I think I did. Ongoing joke. It's fine. And you know, being a part of the clan, you know, there's just people that you will be able to playtest with. You message other people in the clan. We want to do something with the clan. It's just hard. Like, unfortunately, MTGO does not do a lot with the clans.
Yeah, there's not a lot of like built-in infrastructure, but it's definitely something that if someone has any suggestions too for
how
you'd like that to work.
Yeah, email them ccmtg.info@gmail.com. We'd love to know your clan ideas. And then always, if you want to communicate with us, you can tweet us with #WouldThatBeGood. #WouldThatBeGood is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. And let's start with Adrian Carr, who says, doing my own Amonkhet limited set review and archetype breakdown, #WouldBeGood. If you make it, I will post it. I will post it construction criticism on the website. Adrian, you do it. Let me know. I have a platform for you, and we can make that happen. Speaking of which, one of the things that we've been trying to do is decide, like, how are we going to help patrons of the show? And something that I did a long time ago when Manning was on the show is I did a gauntlet breakdown and I gave you deck lists to put in your gauntlet and then playtest against for the week. And I did standard, modern, legacy, standard, modern, legacy. So you had a gauntlet to playtest against for a few weeks, right? And I've decided that I'm going to bring that back. I will try to do it every week and give you that gauntlet. And then you can use that gauntlet for a few weeks until I update the gauntlet. And then gives you, like, just proxy up the decks and playtest against them, or just shove them in with your playtesting partners and just run the gauntlet for you. And I will release it early for the patrons and then release it to the public on Sunday night before I fall asleep. I will try and release it to the patrons. And then on Wednesday, I will release it to the public. So if you want early access to those deck lists and things that I think that you should be playing against to try and get better at Magic and try and improve your win percentage, join the Patreon. The Matt says, #WouldBeGood, Alderaan, 5-day forecast, 72, 74, 15,000 on Wednesday, and then nothing Thursday, Friday. I don't think that the point where your planet is at 15,000 degrees is ever a good thing.
Well, that sounds aggressive.
I couldn't imagine living through that.
I mean, it sounds warm to me, but...
I mean, I'm pretty warm at like 100.
I'm just a whiner.
At 100, at 102, I'm cooking.
It's possible I'm just a whiner.
Yeah. Has anyone else lived through 50? What is the high? At what point does skin melt?
I mean, below 1500, probably.
Yeah.
It can't be healthy. I don't think your doctor would like recommend you go through that.
Definitely not. I love that people are tweeting while we're doing this. Thanks, Mason. We have heard our listeners, and we are going to do the same grading scale as Marshall LR, #WouldBeGood. All right, so I have gotten this complaint since I started this podcast. People were like, why don't you use the same grading scale as Marshall? Because, so I actually have a reason. the A, B, C, D, F scale is actually not used across the world, which people don't know. So that's why we didn't use it. But I get that the LR is so listened to and the concept is so understood that we have finally moved to it. You're welcome. You've asked for it for 2 years. I finally did it. Whatever.
Yeah. It makes sense. If that's what people want, then, you know, yeah. that is a good enough reason for me.
The law of, what does that say? The law of Michael, you need to read this.
All right, hold on.
At 80 degrees, it's getting too hot, but I'm in Wisconsin. I think once you're at 120, it's bad. Getting Michael a maid as a Patreon hashtag, would that be good? I've been telling him to clean that room for literally 3 weeks. All I'm saying.
Scotty says the law of conservation of fun says fun cannot be created or destroyed, only moved around. If no fun is in a game, I took it.
No.
Oh, man. So Scotty took all the fun that's in the game? I don't know. That sounds good for Scotty and bad for everyone else.
So I've thought this for a long time. Also, you have robot voice. But I actually don't think this is true anymore. I actually think that there are games where neither people are having fun. So this weekend I played Two-Headed Giant, and we had the enchantment on turn three, probably our last three matches, where it's two and a black for an enchantment that you can pay an additional one when you cycle and you gain two life. Each opponent loses two life and you gain two life. And Two-Headed Giant, they lose four, you gain two. And I don't know that we had fun any of the last couple of matches because, like, yeah, we were winning, but, like, it wasn't fun.
Sure.
Like, we ended lots of games at 40 life. Like, a lot of games. And, like,
sure.
And it wasn't fun. So that, like, I remember it was round four. We were literally about to 4-0 this thing and like went a box. And I looked at Danny and I was like, Danny, are you having fun? He's like, no. I was like, yeah, me either. This is like so boring. And so I actually don't believe in this law of there's this fun metric and it's you and me on one side and in the middle, we go in between. I just don't think that exists. I think that Magic is better off being fun in some way, and that's not a fun way to play Magic. Is it wrong to love the control mirror?
The lantern control mirror.
Yeah, sorry, thank you. At Denny's Diner at Smith13H, hashtag would that be good? No, I don't think that's wrong.
Only if you play it at Denny's, then it might be.
You can love whatever you want, man.
That is true. Almost by definition.
Yeah, I think that it would be inappropriate for us to tell you what you can and can't like. Like, you're a person, you're a human being, you can like whatever you want. So, and Mason apparently, who is hashtag Austin, also loves the lantern mirror. So, this is a hashtag that'd be good now. Getting at Magic Mike MTG. A maid for his place as a patron goal. What do you think at Katy Perry? #Hashtag with that. So Katy Perry needs to tell us if you need a maid.
Why? I feel like the answer is.
How much room is to your left?
Like 10 or 12 feet, but there's a bed. So.
But like. Does all of the things that are behind you need to be in the frame, or could you put a magic picture there like me? Like my room is not. If I turn, like there's a closet and chairs. And all like, right.
So what you're saying is you want me to lift up my webcam so you can see. Here is the left of my room.
Okay.
This is our guest bedroom / storage space area.
Look at that floor. So, is that a Nerf gun?
Probably.
You have Nerf guns in your house?
Yeah, we have a bunch of stuff that my girlfriend's niece and nephew can use if they come over. So.
Mason says he will buy you a drink in Vegas if you clean that room for the podcast.
Well, given that I don't drink, that just seems like bad value.
I was going to say that. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Michael, what did you learn this week?
Well, I learned that the people really value a clean room more than I do.
Here's the thing, is this room is not that clean, but I just cleaned the frame.
Oh, so what you're wanting me to do is just cheat, basically. You just
they don't know the difference. They're watching on a camera.
I'll just put a green screen behind me and it'll be like I'm podcasting from the beach.
That would be great. You pick a different location every week. I would appreciate
it. Awesome.
I don't know that Google Hangouts has that possibility, but you know, you do you, man. You do you.
Well, anything has the possibility if I just, you know.
And also Mason says it doesn't have to be alcoholic. It can be water, man.
I mean,
here's the thing.
I don't need people to buy me water. I mean,
the only thing in your frame is like the shower curtain. Like that's the only thing. It's like, why is there a shower rod in your frame?
Oh, that's not a shower curtain. It's just a curtain rod. And it's because my drill is currently sort of broken. So I need to get a new drill so I can take out the blinds and put up curtains in this room. But you know, now we're getting into a list of things that my girlfriend would like me to do. So,
yeah. So for me, I learned that I'm really excited to get back into magic. So I'm really trying. It's really hard with the kid, but I'm excited to focus on the training grounds this week. The reason I picked it is really for me. I need to get better at what we talked about this week, and I'm really excited for it. So thank you everybody for listening. We will see you guys all next week. And thank you everybody for in the chat. And Jeremy London would really like you to get a green screen. So
I mean, who wouldn't? I don't know what a green screen costs. I know that a shower curtain is probably cheaper. So you know,
no, they're like $60. I've looked at them before. They're really useful for like XSplit when you like want just your face inside of your Hearthstone screen.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening and watching, and we'll see you guys all next time.
See ya. I remember now that I do have to say something for it to
for it to go to you.
Otherwise, it just fades to black with only Spencer.
Bye, everyone.